I would like to call this meeting of the City Council of University City to order at 6:30. Ms. Pum, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Price? Ms. Carr? Mr. Kraft?
Here.
Mr. Crowe?
Here.
Mr. Glickard? Mr. Sharp?
Here.
Mayor Welsh?
Here. Thank you very much. We now move on to the approval of the agenda. Does any member of council have any changes he or she would like to make to the agenda? Ms. Carr?
I'd like to remove the closed session.
Okay, we have a motion to remove the closed session from the agenda. Thank you, Ms. Carr. Any other changes to the agenda? Okay, and so no other changes. So Ms. Carr has made a motion. We have a second from Mr. Glickard. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the agenda as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We have no proclamations this evening. We now move on to the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the City Council study session of November 13, 2012? Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Price seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the City Council regular session minutes from the meeting of November 26, 2012? Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second? Ms. Carr seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We now move on to appointments. Mr. Crowe, you have an appointment.
Yes, Madam Mayor, I'd like to appoint Jim Guest to the Historic Preservation Commission.
Thank you very much. We have a motion. Is there a second? Ms. Carr seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Kraft, you have an appointment?
Right. This is for Karen St. Clair to be renominated to the Parks Commission. But it would be for a period of 1 year. The reason we're asking this is because there's like three terms that are up in January, and there's two people who have been on the commission for like less than a year. So the turnover has been pretty extreme. It's a commission that meets a lot. And so the suggestion was that if she would stay on and be chairman for one more year, that would help the transition as... And it would also help stagger the terms so we're not, you know, 4 years from now stuck with the same thing where we have, you know, three or four people all being termed out at the same time.
So we have a motion. Is there a second? Ms. Carr, is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We now have the swearing in of Mr. Frederick Fair III to the Arts and Letters Commission. Is Mr. Fair here? If you could come up to the podium, please.
I, Frederick Fair III.
Do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications.
Do solemnly swear that I possess all the qualifications.
Not subject to any of the disqualifications.
Not subject to any of the disqualifications.
Named in the charter for the office I'm about to assume.
Named in the charter for the office I'm about to assume.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States.
And of the state of Missouri.
And of the state of Missouri.
The charter and ordinances of University City.
And the charter and ordinances of University City.
Faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties.
The office I'm about to assume.
Or the office I'm about to assume.
Impartiality and justice.
With impartiality and justice.
Official.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And now Bonnie Tesson will be sworn into the Arts and Letters Commission.
Already. Raise your right hand and repeat after me. I and your name.
I, Bonnie Tesson.
Do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications.
Do solemnly swear that I possess all the qualifications.
And am not subject to any of the disqualifications.
And am not subject to any of the disqualifications.
Named in the charter for the office I'm about to assume.
named in the charter for the office I am about to assume.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States.
And of the state of Missouri.
And of the state of Missouri.
And the charter and ordinances of University City.
And the charters and ordinances of University City.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties.
Of the office I'm about to assume.
Of the office I am about to assume.
With impartiality and justice.
With impartiality and justice.
Congratulations, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Ms. Cindy Theory was sworn into the Caleb Commission in the City Clerk's office. We now move on to the first citizen participation portion of the agenda. I ask each resident to please give your name and address when you come to the podium. Please turn the mic on when you reach the podium and off when you leave it, and please limit your comments to 5 minutes. The first resident who would like to speak is Ms. Elsie Glickert.
Elsie Glickert, 6712 Etzel. I have handouts for the council, which I would like you to distribute, please, Joyce. This is in regard to the loop trolley, and I think it is imperative for this city council to read the attached mail-in ballot cast by the 15 landowners creating the Loop Transportation District, and that was to enhance the economic development east of Skinker. So the first ballot you will see, there are three ballots, and this is just for information. I don't think that the council has even seen these ballots. One ballot is signed by Washington University because they are the largest landowner. The second ballot is signed by Joe Edwards, who is the second largest landowner. And the third ballot is the infamous parcel of land purchased by the History Museum and signed by Richard Archibald, president. And I guess we probably all own this land since it was our zoo museum tax dollar that purchased it. Now, the next page, please note these copies of this official ballot specifically state that the Loop Transportation District terminates at Kingsland, not west of Kingsland. You're all familiar with annexing properties. Cities annex properties frequently, not too frequently, but both parties vote on the annexation. Assume that University City annexes Clayton, and both cities vote to do so. Then University City subsequently decides, oh, let's also take in the Galleria. It's just a few blocks south. It would be nice, but no. You cannot do that. A boundary is a boundary. The ballot says Kingsland is the western boundary. The ballots also specifically state a vote for a feasibility study. And as mentioned in the above paragraph, Joe Edwards voted for a feasibility study on his many, many ballots. Also is attached is a copy of the University City Council minutes. Some of you were not on the council at that time. July 16th, 2007, awarding, that's a typo, it should be $250,000 to the Loop Transportation District for a feasibility study. In these minutes, feasibility study is mentioned at least 6 times by council members and Mr. Joe Edwards, the trolley promoter. So they knew what they were voting for. Now, the next page is a feasibility study mentioned in Resolution 88 of the City of St. Louis, dated July 18, 2008. Has the Loop Transportation District reimbursed the City of University City the thousands of dollars for filing this declaratory judgment? They're supposed to. Sufficient evidence exists that a feasibility study has been voted by the property owners' ballots and the University City Council. Where is it? A previous council funded it, and you should demand it for the 35,000 residents of University City. An environmental study is not the same. I look forward to these answers. And an interesting aside regarding the trolley board. Ben Uchitel is chairman of the Zoo Museum Taxing District, which allocates our tax dollar to the History Museum and the zoo and so forth. And he is treasurer of the trolley board. Robert Archibald is president of the trolley board, or he was until recently, and he had pledged $1 million to the trolley board from our tax dollar, and that has since been canceled. Now, isn't that cozy? Stay tuned. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Tom Sullivan.
Tom Sullivan, 751 Syracuse. I'm drafting an initiative petition regarding trolleys in University City to possibly be circulated next year. At this point, the petition would propose an ordinance that would set a business license of $50,000 a year for any trolley operating within the city, a tax of $1 for each trolley passenger, and mandate a security guard for each trolley car when it is in operation. Should anyone have any other suggestions on what should be included, I would be glad to hear from them. Also, a bond issue for the University City School District is planned for the ballot next spring. Since the principal of University City High School is on tonight's agenda, a question I would have for him is why so many of his students are doing so poorly. Test scores show only 18% passing math at the high school. What about the 82% that are failing? It's doubtful they will become engineers, accountants, or scientists. This would be especially true if they attended Pershing Elementary School, where only 7% are passing science in fifth grade. This is down from 29% a few years ago. Rather than all the happy talk, I think UCity residents need to know why so many students are falling behind. It's hard to understand why voters should approve another bond issue until some answers are provided. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Jen Jensen.
My name is Jen Jensen. I live at 706 Pennsylvania. I recently read on Patch about a proposal at the last council meeting, whereas the Citizens Crime Task Force failed to win approval by the council. I also read in the article on Patch that one of the city council members was quoted as saying that he didn't see the need for the city to create another citizen task force. I'm quoting now, the police chief has what he needs and council members, some of the council members have laid out a plan. The part that I'm questioning is when he said, we have a checkered past with focus groups. I've served on three task force and many other committee things in my time in University City. Most recently, I served on the seniors and youth task force. I served on the year-round swimming task force. And quite a long time ago, it seems like a long time to me anyway, I was chairperson of the Prop K committee, which was actually a task force. There were no problems that I could see, no checkered past on any of these important task force that I served on, While it is true that citizens come together, when citizens come together, that there will be some questions and disagreement, but that's what a task force is about. You are bringing together suggestions and ideas, and some are good and some aren't so good and some are excellent. But we came together for a report, with a report, and I think the last two task force, well, all three of them, if you look back at the Prop K, we put up a pretty doggone good center for recreation, and our pool is one of the best, I think, in the country. And that all of these task force have brought together people with expertise and knowledge and good ideas, and I'm wondering why such a task force on crime was disapproved. So I'm looking forward to hearing what this checkered past is about. I feel like I'm kind of in the loop, so to speak, on what goes on, and I'm hearing things, but I have never heard of a checkered past on any of the task force. Thank you.
Thank you. That is our last request to speak at this time. We now move forward with the agenda. We have no public hearings tonight. We have no consent agenda tonight. We now move on to the city manager's report. Mr. Walker.
Madam Mayor and members of council, the first item under the city manager's report is a brief update from Mr. Michael Macklin, who is the principal of the University City High School. Mr. Macklin.
If you could give us your name and the address, we'd appreciate that.
Michael Macklin, 76 Balsam Avenue. Let me say it is a pleasure to be here tonight to talk about the great things that are going on at University City High School. I'm just going to talk about a couple of key points, a couple of brief points here. Student attendance at University High School is currently 94%. In the past 5 years, attendance at University City High School has not been over 89%. As of November 2nd, there were 436 students who were on the honor roll, which is half the attendance. We set a goal for 50%, and we are definitely achieving that. Eight seniors scored an ACT score of 30+, and one student scored a 35, which is 1 point away from a perfect score. We're expecting at least 2 National Merit Scholars. Now, what does that mean? Even a school district like Maplewood Richmond Heights, who has been around since 1909, has not had a National Merit Scholar. We're the recipient of St. Louis Graduates Grant, which will pay for 10 students to go through the Princeton Review and offer 2 $500 scholarships to pay for books. We have achieved A+ certification, which will allow our students to take 2 years of courses at a community college and 3 local universities for free. We were the recipient of the Dow Yearbook Award again in 2010 and was just awarded this year. We have students who were just granted an internship with PricewaterhouseCoopers for accounting. 2 of our students just finished the Chancellor Scholarship Competition for a full ride scholarship to Missouri S&T. In the spring, 50 juniors will visit the University of Missouri Columbia in March 2013. We're taking college trips, our freshmen to Forest Park, sophomores to UMSL, our juniors to SLU, our seniors to SEMO. In athletics, our football team plays 2nd in districts. Our volleyball team won the district championship, and our dance team won the 1st place trophy in the dance competition on Saturday. Regarding other items, YouServe, which is a full community service project and organization. 2 years ago, I was working with a student, and this student was going to an Ivy League school. And when the Ivy League recruiter came into my office to inquire about the student, the Ivy League recruiter was not as much concerned about the student's GPA or ACT score, because when you're applying to an Ivy League school, there are 2 things you better have. The Ivy League recruiter wanted to know, Mr. Macklin, what community service opportunities has this young man been involved in? What separates himself from the 8,000 freshmen that are applying? So University City, you serve, which is the full community service initiative, provide students with peer tutoring and a chance to obtain those service learning opportunities. And finally, 25 students will be awarded the chance to attend the presidential inauguration in 2013. I received a call from Maddie Moore, who is the Deputy Chief Commissioner to Claire McCaskill, with the great news that we will be awarded the chance to take our students to the inauguration. These are some of the good things, the great things that are happening at University City High School. Yes, I am the head principal, but along with myself here, I brought my administrative team, and I'm going to ask them to stand. Malcolm Hill to the far right, Ernest Carter, who was born and raised in University City, is an alumni, and Susan Hill. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Does any member of council have any questions? Mr. Price, Mr. Macklin, could Mr. Price ask a question?
Well, I don't know if it's a question or a comment. I would like to acknowledge Principal Macklin and his staff. My son graduated last year, and I wish he was there this year.
Thank you.
He graduated a year too early because I did some anecdotal evidence myself. I was at Snooks, saw a young guy, stopped him, and I said, "You in high school?" "Yes." "What high school you go to?" "U City High." "Said, how you like the school?" He's like, "It's night and day." He said, "You have to do what you're told," which I do like. You know, you got to have rules and order. And he said, "It appears that to me, you know, there's a lot of, you know, learning and academics going on." He said, "I wouldn't say that wasn't going on last year, but it's a lot more prominent this year." And he said, "I have to make sure I get to school on time." So I was like, okay. Then I talked to another kid, and basically they told me the same thing. So I just want you all to keep up the great work, your staff, yourself, and I can't speak for anybody else. I know the school district is going after a bond issue, and I'm going to stand on the principle. I was taught by my grandmother, who was born in 1899, fourth grade education. She told me, always support the kids because I supported you. So I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that bond issue passes. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Macklin, can I just say that Mr. Walker and I regularly have four lunches a year with the superintendent and the president of the school board, and I have conveyed to Ms. Pruitt that I do think it would benefit the district to educate our residents, publicize the details of the scores, the points Mr. Sullivan brought up. I do think our residents need to understand the reality behind all the numbers before another bond issue comes, and I think Mr. Sullivan's points about the scores he's thinking of, I think it would benefit our residents to be educated about what the numbers are, if there have been improvements, what you're planning to move them forward, et cetera, et cetera. So that's on, I've mentioned that to Ms. Pruitt, but I would just mention it to you all, so I think that would help our community understand the school district better.
Thank you.
Mr. Walker.
Second item under the city manager's report is a liquor license for Dow 10, located at 8600 Olive. They currently have a liquor license. They're applying for a liquor license for Sunday sales. Staff is recommending approval.
Is there a motion to approve? Mr. Price, is there a second? Mr. Sharp seconds. Is there any discussion?
Just a
Mr. Flicker?
Is it $8,600 or is it $6,600, which is what I have on my agenda?
It is $8,600, which is on the cover sheet. I'm sorry, we didn't catch that
mistake. Yeah, because I drove by there today and I couldn't find the restaurant.
It's $8,600.
Thank you.
That's what I have on my agenda. Who's got something else?
I think there is a typo on the council agenda, which we did not catch. I apologize for that, but Mr. Glickert, it is $8,600. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Mr. Walker.
Third item under the city manager's agenda is a Sunday liquor license for Olive Supermarket at 8041 Olive.
Mr. Price moves approval. Is there a second? Ms. Carr seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Mr. Walker.
Fourth item is the reciprocal golf course agreement with the city of Creve Coeur. Staff is recommending approval.
Is there a motion to approve? Ms. Carr moves. Is there a second? Mr. Glickert seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Mr. Walker.
The fifth item is coming out of the pension board. I would ask Mr. Carr, who is the chairperson of the pension board, to make a brief presentation on behalf of the non-uniformed pension board with respect to this item.
Good evening, members of council, Madam Mayor. I'm Jim Carr. I live at 7901 Gannon, and I am the chairman of the Non-Uniform Pension Board. I'm here in that capacity tonight. What you council members have in your packets, plus what is now being handed out, is about everything that has occurred in the board regarding the item, the motion that was passed on November 27 to add some additional money, $100,000 a month, above and beyond the annual contribution to the non-uniform board. That motion passed, and you have the motion stated twice, actually. The motion is also stated in the minutes, which you have. The minutes give a pretty good, the draft minutes, let me hasten to say that. These have not been approved by the pension board. You have that, and plus I just handed out another copy of the same document I gave you a few months ago. This document has also been passed by the Non-Uniform Pension Board, which is considerations relating to this subject. Should we contribute something extra to the pension board, to the non-uniformed fund? Mr. Crow is the pension board liaison. He probably could have carried this message to you, but I'm the chairman and perhaps I can answer questions. I don't think I have anything additional to add right now at the start, beyond what the pension board has done and sent to you. So I think maybe I can add to the conversation a little bit if you have any questions to ask.
Any member of council have questions? Ms. Carr?
Actually, I do have several questions. In reading over the minutes, some things occurred to me. I wanted to know, did the pension board take a look and discuss the funding levels of other communities in this area for comparative purposes?
Madam Councilwoman, the only information we have on that subject is what the actuary discussed with us. We have asked the same question. I don't think we have we do not have a database on what other communities are looking like. He just assured us that we are not alone in the funding level, or I should say underfunding level. Most municipalities and most corporations are underfunded to some extent, and many to a greater extent than we are.
Okay. Thank you. Did the board consult with the actuary on the necessity of this contribution? It wasn't clear from the minutes.
No.
Did the board consult with the actuary or any other experts on establishing an amount, since They didn't talk about the necessity.
No, not that I can recall. Nope.
Can you tell me how that amount was determined, the $1.2 million?
It was an estimate. We discussed various ways at arriving at a number, trying to provide a concrete number, and the estimate was based on a couple of things, but I think the summary position was that amount of money should get us to a level that would be at or slightly above the 80% level of funding and a little closer to parity with the uniform board, which has its own and separate funding mechanism.
Okay. And then were there other amounts suggested? The only thing I could find in these minutes is something that Mr. Reedy said, if we have an improving economy and market, we might not need the additional contribution, but that really didn't address the amount.
The pension board does kind of what the city council does here, and we discuss things sometimes, and we discuss this matter over the course of a couple of meetings, and I believe I recall over a course of a couple of meetings we did discuss a range of ideas, and the board tried to push ourselves to get to a number, a concrete number that we could give city council, and in a couple of places in the minutes you see some comments made that it will ultimately be a city council decision. Different numbers were suggested at different times.
Okay. Is the board recommending this one-time contribution of $1.2 million because we can, the city can, because we have some money in reserves, or is it because it's a necessity? And that would be important to me.
I actually don't know. Somewhere in here in the minutes, one of the arguments was that we do have $10 million, I think, somewhere. That came up in one of the discussions. In fact, I argued personally, you'll see under my comments, I argued against the motion, and I think I made a couple of comments that the numbers are based on 12/31/11 values, and that I felt I prefer not to present an idea to City Council just to get an idea in front of them without a clear and specific need.
Okay. Let's see. What happens to the money if the market takes a dive? The market's been increasing over the last year or so, but what happens to that $1.2 million if it takes a dive?
If you put the additional $1.2 million in a year, and then the market takes a dive, of course, whatever that's invested in would probably go down in value.
Okay. So we might be looking at having to recover that money as well. All right. In order to assure that over the long term, and this is kind of what I'm getting at, that we are putting away enough money, has the board considered any other approaches, such as adjusting the amortization rate from 30 years to 15 years, or any other interest rates in determining the amount that is asked for each year?
Yes, we talked about those things a couple of times, and most specifically was a question that came up, and in fact council members may recall the study session we had, I believe, in July, and at the prior meeting where we had reviewed the actuarial report with the actuary, we talked about what would happen if we would reduce our actuarial assumption from 6.5% to 6%. And just for every benefit of everyone in the room, if we reduce our actuarial assumption from 6%, 6.5% to 6%, that means we're assuming our money grows at a slower rate, and therefore we have to put in more. And if I recall correctly, the differential on an annual contribution was maybe 100-something thousand. And the other question, similar question, was what would happen if we'd reduce it from 6.5% down to 5%? This is not linear, so when we reduced it from 6.5% down to 5%, the additional contribution was, I think, almost doubled what we put in. But that would be a decision that could be, that's the decision that the board would make. If we want to have a higher annual contribution according to the calculation, then we can be more conservative. I might add that this number we use, 6.5%, is based on a long-term expectation of the growth of the assets in the plan, And we are, if I recall correctly, the actuary has said we are in the no higher than average. I may be using the wrong terms, but we're not at all out of line. There are a few lower, and there are plenty higher. Those organizations that are still estimating their assets are going to grow at 8% or 8.5% are having trouble now. Some of them are in California in bankruptcy. But so we're not really out of line at the 6.5% growth rate right now, but we could reduce to have a methodical larger increase, contribution to the fund.
When I pay our bills, our utility bills, I always choose the budget approach so that I can smooth my expenses over the year and actually can say this is how much I need every month. Would adjusting that rate, those rates, actually work for us in the same way, or am I oversimplifying that?
It's a good comparison. If we have a couple of cold winters in a row, then our heat bill goes up, but at least we can kind of see it coming, and it's a steady number, it's a stable number, and we're not getting a huge bill one month, and then when spring comes along, you have a low bill, a low heat bill, whatever your heat source is. And in a way, that's what happens in the pension funds. We have a smoothing, smoothing, and so when the market goes down, it's actually an interesting point you've brought up, when the market goes down, we don't feel the full impact of that. We don't have to make up that value in 1 year. The performance of the fund, that is the market going down, is averaged over 5 years. So it's kind of like the average of your heat bill over the last year, and then what is used to calculate your heat bill for a while. So when the market moves sharply, we actually base our required actuarial contribution on a 5-year performance of the fund. So this worked to our benefit when the financial collapse of 2008 happened, and we weren't immediately trying to, well, we knew the stock market, measured by the S&P, dropped almost 40%, so the equity side of our portfolio presumably was in that ballpark. I can't remember the number. We were not required to make up that value immediately. It was an adjustment that was smoothed over 5 years, and accordingly, now that things have picked up, the market is growing. It has grown since it bottomed in actually early 2009, but we are still not seeing the benefit, not feeling quite as good, because we're still required to calculate the last 4 or 5 bad years. They're not necessarily bad years, they've been recovery years, but the value of the fund at the end of each year has been lower than we are now, so it takes a while for us to catch up with where we are in valuation.
Okay, and then when does the board receive the actuary's next report, please?
We're actually a little late this year. The report for 2012, dated June of 2012, was to cover 2011, and that was a little late, and I can't remember the exact reasons. I think we had changes of command internally and something disconnected at the actuary. We tend to review them in April, and I believe that they're typically dated end of March, April, for our April meeting. That's the best of my recollection, springtime.
Okay.
Ms. Carr, yes? Could I ask, it's over 10 minutes. Do you have many
just
more?
Just one more.
Just
question.
One more, okay.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to
Mr.
Glicker.
Thank the council and everyone for bearing with me. I just wanted to cover everything at once. Is there an immediacy or an emergency nature to this request? Because I really couldn't tell. And could it be postponed and incorporated into the next budget, which we're now considering?
The immediacy, emergency, not that I could explain to you right now. I don't know what that would be. And the budget cycle would be up to City Council.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Glicker.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. Jim, actually, Ms. Carr asked some questions that I was going to ask, and I think they were answered. Thank you. The rate of return is what I looked at there, and you talked about 6.5, and then there's other places, let's say California as your example, at 8 or 8.5% rate of return. Very, very. You're very concerned about that. What has the board discussed in reference to where we want to be as an objective, this board, for our employees, as far as a rate of return is concerned? Are we content with a 6.5%, or should we be a little bit higher than that as we look at these figures from the actuary, or at the end of the year, if you will?
I'll go back to what I said just a moment ago, and the term you used, should we be higher than that? Did you mean lower than that to be more conservative?
Right.
Right.
Should be lower than that to be more conservative. We've touched on it. We've touched on it fairly regularly, and we've had a sufficient number of people in the investments world and familiar with investment performance. We've concluded that we probably don't need to change it right now. We're all in the same situation that humans are always in when we go through market fluctuations, and that is we feel bad. We want to control something. We want to change something when times are tough. When our economy is strong, the market's strong, our portfolios are strong, then we feel good about it, and then we're tempted to reverse your question and say, let's push it up. Let's say we're getting more out of the portfolio. So, but we have discussed it. We have concluded from a long-term investment standpoint, we could stay where we are.
Mr. Crow?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Jim, as always, I think when you make the presentations, they're sort of calming for all of us. I would first, as a liaison, it may sound a little bit self-serving, but I will tell you, though, we may not all agree at the pension board meetings. That is a very dedicated group of people that are now meeting more often than I think they've ever met, and probably having more vigorous discussions than I think have occurred historically. I guess my first question, and I think Ms. Carr may have touched on it, I'm trying to figure out on the agenda, it says that this can't be rescheduled, and I'm assuming we can, right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. It looks to me like, again, these requests, though, and it really through no fault of anyone, are coming based on numbers that are 11 months old, and the request is coming without any advice from the group, the professionals that we pay every year, which are our actuaries, to tell us what we need to do. So I'm coming back to the fact that we haven't got actuarial advice on this. We're asking for a double contribution, and our auditors continue to tell us that we shouldn't be spending money off budget, and this would be a very large offline item for us. So I guess I want to piggyback sort of on Ms. Carr's comment, and I know that Mr. McCarthy wants to speak, and he has truly been involved in this, and he needs to be heard tonight. We've already started the budget process for next year, and it seems to me that if we can work through this with getting input from the actuary and by all means the pension board again and coming back with a proposal to be considered in the next budget cycle, that seems to be a practical and prudent way to move forward.
Mr. Crow, I'd like to call Mr. McCarthy up, and then we can see if there's a motion on the floor. Mr. Edward McCarthy. Thank you, Mr. Carr. Can Mr. McCarthy speak? And then, Mr. Carr, if you can stay up here, we'll have other questions. Thanks.
Edward McCarthy, 7101 Princeton Avenue. I guess just a few points. Number one, Paulette, you brought up the analogy of if this is an electric bill, wouldn't you like to be on budget? Well, it's not an electric bill. It's more like a mortgage. And if you pay it off early, you save money over the long run. It's just a matter of whether you can afford it compared to your other expenses. So don't compare it to the electric bill. Compare it to a mortgage. Let me just simplify this entire process very easily for you. It's just, we make 6.5%. You have $10 million. You're making 0.9. You're not making any money, okay? You're just letting money sit there in checking accounts, and it's making 0.9% interest. We make 6.5. So who do you think should have the money over the long run, over the next year, next 2 years, next 3 years? I would say the 6.5. And we're not guaranteeing the 6%, but we're pretty good at it, okay? And it's not us, it's FAMCO. Number two, I guess I would just like to ask if, legally, if we could borrow money to put it in there to get a better return for you, but that may not matter. And the other problem is that if you needed the money, you have $10 million sitting in your checking accounts and it's growing. My question is, if you needed it, use it, but you're not using it, so why don't you pay your bill? You owe us $5 million just to this fund, not to the uniform pension plan, just to this one. So why don't you pay your bill? And like I said, we'll reduce the amount that you owe. And here's the last thing I have, and that is this. If the market goes down, you contributed more money, you did good. If the market goes up, you contributed more money, and the investments that we put the money in went up even faster. You did good. So it's good, good if you put the money in, and it's bad, bad if you don't. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Kraft?
Right. I just wanted a couple comments and questions. First of all, I just wanted to kind of go over, this is not a board without expertise. As I look at it, I think there's three accountants on it. You're a financial person. Julie Neiman, I hear her on the national radio talking about investments. So these are people that certainly have expertise. My understanding, when I went to the meetings on the pension board, and perhaps you can answer, if anything, the actuaries are quite clear that they don't want to make recommendations about how much money to put in. That they, whenever you ask them that question, they'll give you graphs and grids and things like that, and say, "It's your money. You have to decide." Is that a reasonable summary?
Yes, I think so.
And the other thing about this proposal, I had considered, well, let's just write them a big check, put $5 million in and get it over with. The way I understand this proposal it sort of has a cost averaging advantage to it. In other words, the proposal is to, I haven't taken that many finance courses, but what I learned from the finance courses basically is the last thing you can do is to try to figure out the timing of the market. I'm going to buy tomorrow because I know it's going to go up next week, and I'm going to sell today because, at least that strategy is apparently the worst strategy possible. So what they suggest is an income averaging strategy where you put money on a regular basis. And it seemed to me that the concept here of putting in $100,000 a month was sort of, a disciplined way of putting it in on a regular basis. So you can make a comment about income, about cost averaging. And the other thing about it is, if we do fall off a fiscal cliff and we're having a hard time paying the electric bill, we can just decide to not, we haven't put in $1.2 million, we could just decide that, we're not going to do it. We're only obligated at $100,000 a month. Is that how I understood the proposal from the pension board?
I'll try to remember all that. I'll go in reverse order. The end of the first paragraph of the motion talks about some flexibility given to council. So as conditions change, yes, you've introduced the concept of dollar cost averaging. Two things occurred to me as you mentioned that, Mr. Kraft, and that those things are we are essentially dollar cost averaging by doing our actuarial calculation and putting that in on an annual basis. And then, yes, rather than putting $1 million or $1.2 million in all at one time, there's an argument in favor of dollar cost averaging over the period of a year. So we're saying that compares to one big shot on January 2nd or dollar cost averaging that over a year. So that would be a comparison as to whether you're dollar cost averaging that million or not over a year. So it's a matter of degree. Dollar cost averaging, for anybody who doesn't know it, is just a way to put, as Mr. Kraft described, put a little bit of money into something over time, and what you wind up doing is buying some of that when it's cheap and some of that when it's more expensive, and it works out to be in your favor. If the market ends up flat, you wind up a little bit ahead, and that's the basics of dollar cost averaging.
And the other thing, I paid for dinner with a finance professor friend of mine, and it didn't cost that much. It was on $10 or whatever. But and I asked him the same question that Mr. McCarthy brought up. It was like, okay, so tell me, if I put the money into the pension fund, do I get an automatic 6% return compared to what I'm doing right now? And his answer, as a typical finance answer, was, well, sort of. So his answer was that over time, you do get more money, okay? And his again, this is a finance professor. These guys don't actually use real money. They just use equations. But, you know, his suggestion was, you know, if you've got the money and you're not doing anything, if you have something else that you want to do with it, then if you want to build a bridge or a park or a street or whatever it is, we'll spend it for that. But the way he explained it to me is, if it's just sitting there and you're getting, you know, checking account rates, you can either, you know, spend it on something, pay your bill, which you do owe the money. We're going to have to pay that money anyway. The question is, do we want to pay it over, what's our amortization? Is it 30 years right now? Is that what we're required?
Yes.
Yeah. So 30 years from now, most of us aren't, none of us are going to be on council, and a lot of us won't even be alive. So we could pay it off now. Or a third possibility is, I mean, we could just cut tax rates and give it back to our to the taxpayers, right? Or we where's our city attorney? Can we declare a special dividend? That's what corporations do with extra money, and just give it back. I mean, that's another possibility, isn't it?
Was there a question in there?
Is that a real question?
Actually, the question was the finance question. Was there anything in the finance question about a little better rate of return in a professionally managed fund than in a checking account?
I think I can call your attention to two things. On the handout that I just gave out, should City Council consider adding item number 15, there are two things, and I may be getting a little bit into opinion here, so I want to be sure I'm being fair here. You've already touched on it. It's the obligation, 15A. The obligation grows as a function of demographics. The obligation is going to happen according to the people in the plan, their ages, decisions, car wrecks that kill somebody. That will change the math that the actuary will go through. So the obligation is growing at an unknown number. But the actuary starts with the best estimate of what those future results will be, and then we discount that at 6.5%. So in other words, based on what he thinks we'll need in the future to pay all the benefits, how fast do we grow a given amount of money to get there? And through all this process, we have to make it all match up. To make it match up to pay all those future pension benefits, we either have to put more money in, or we have to grow it faster, and the question of how fast is it growing is the question that we make. There is a range that is, well, in the public sector, corporations, there's a range. I can't remember if there's a range for municipal plans. There must be. I don't think our actuary would let us get too extreme. It's the 8%, 8.5% on the very risky end, or maybe down to 5% if we want to be super conservative, but we can change that number. That's an assumption we make, but the assumption is an effort to capture what the rate of return on our portfolio. That's the point, and that's where it all comes together.
So right now, we understand that 6.5 is a not unreasonable rate,
right.
Although if anybody has an investment guarantee for the next 20 years for 6.5%, just give me a call.
That's the key word, Mr. Kraft. That's the key word.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed is the key word.
Okay, but 6.5% is considered not conservative, but not wildly. So the only suggestion would be is if I'm sitting here with the city's money of $10 million or whatever it is, and we have the opportunity to put a million, we're not putting all 10 million, and we're saying, you know, let's take a million and 0.2 and put it in because these guys have been pretty good about getting 6.5% a year versus, no, I think we should just leave it in the checking account at 0.9%. To me, it seems like a pretty safe bet. It's not like we're betting it's not like I'm betting this month's mortgage money, or we're not betting our payroll or the light bill. I mean, this is money that's just sitting in the checking account. We're not doing anything with it.
I think I agree with your finance professor at the beginning of your comments. If the money's there and it's not doing anything and it's I can understand his reasoning. If it's not doing anything and it has no other need, city council, city manager, our auditor, all the people involved in our budget process and our numbers have to make that decision. I don't know that there's money sitting there doing nothing. I've heard that we have reserves, but I'm not concerning myself with that. And this will be, I mean, this is my opinion. At this point, I don't see a need starting from the pension board. And please be fair, because that's my opinion. And you see, I argued against the motion. In fact, in my comments, in the minutes, I say I agree with just about everything that's been said here in terms of sentiment. But I didn't see the need, because all of these concerns, all this math is captured in our actuarial process. So.
I appreciate your comments. I don't think there's a right or a wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, hey, if you bought Walmart 30 years ago, gee, I guess it was right. But if you bought Kodak, whoops, you know. But it's hard to predict, and I agree completely.
Mr. Price, then Mr. Crow, and we have one more request to speak.
Well, this is a comment to the council, is that we, in our budget study session, we went over budget challenges like street sidewalks, backlog and street maintenance, repair, tree trimming, etc. So it's a misnomer to say it's money laying around that's not doing anything. It's money laying around that probably need to be spent to do something. So to say it's just excess money is an invalid position, because I don't know about anybody on this council, but I do know I'm going to request for more money for streets, sidewalks, etc. So that could affect what the amount is left if they're talking about the reserves. So I don't know what people mean when they say it's just money laying around doing nothing. Maybe that tells us we probably need to spend more money to do something.
Mr. Crow?
I'm happy to let the citizens speak. I guess my real comments are that I think even our director of finance says that this is not money that we just have sitting around with no use for it, and that our cash reserves are not overly healthy as compared to other municipalities. I think the comparison between money in a checking account and money in a pension plan is comparing apples and oranges. Your money in your checking account is something that you have readily accessible, and it is cash. Your money in a pension plan is a long-term investment with lots of strings attached to it. And part of the reason that we are in this quandary isn't that we've earned our 6.5% the last few years. It's because no one in the country has earned 6.5%. We're coming out of the second most significant economic crisis in our country, and I really don't think we can find any community around us that is actually thinking about taking money out of cash and putting it into their pension plan, whether it be on a monthly basis or on a yearly basis. So I have to agree with Mr. Kraft and Mr. Carr that I don't think this is a zero-sum game as some have presented tonight. I mean, there's not necessarily a right or a wrong answer, but to me, the prudent approach for us is to actually ask the pension board members who would like to participate with the city council members and meet with the actuary. I agree with Mr. Carr that it's unlikely that they're going to give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down, but since this request is based on numbers that are literally 11 months old right now, it seems to make sense to me that we sit down with our actuary and move forward. There doesn't need to be a vote tonight. There doesn't need to be a motion tonight. It would make sense to me that we ask the city manager to set up a meeting with the actuaries, and please invite any members of the pension board that would like to come and get their input on this specific question as we prepare for the budget for next year.
Would you like to make a motion to that effect?
Well, I want to make sure, though, that all of our citizens get a chance. Yeah, I just want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to talk, because I, you know.
We'll come back. Ms. Carr and then Mr. Pace.
I have one question, probably of the city manager. How would the payment actually be made? I know that the pension board is proposing that it be made monthly, but would it actually be made monthly, or would we be making a one-time transfer? Because from the minutes, I got the impression that might not happen that way.
Madam Mayor, through to Councilmember Carr, we could do it either way. It would just be an accounting transaction. We could do it either way.
Mr. Gregory Pace?
Gregory Pace, 7171 Westmoreland. Wouldn't it be really wonderful if I could wave a magic wand and in the future we wouldn't have to have this discussion? Defined contribution. I know, broken record, you've heard me talk about this before. That's the way to go. That's what's happening in the private industry, private sector. Defined contribution, then we don't have to be concerned about this. Let me suggest, if there is any interest on council, and I guess, you know, hopefully there might be, get Mr. Aaron Himmler, I think. He's the president of the, I don't know if it's the Melville Fire Protection District or whatever down there, but they went from a defined benefit plan to a defined contribution overnight, and they simply capped the employees, the firefighters, and they got everything on the defined benefit, everything they're going to get. And then from that moment on, though, everything else was defined contribution. He's a very smart guy. He got a lot of things done against a lot of lawsuits. If there is any interest, I highly suggest you bring the gentleman in and have him talk to you about how he did it, what they did, what the process was. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Crow, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, Madam Mayor. I would make a motion to direct the city manager to set up a study session with our actuary and the members of the pension board to ascertain an appropriate course of action as to the allocation of any funds from the general fund to the pension fund.
We have a motion for Mr. Crow and a second for Mr. Sharp. Any discussion? Ms. Carr?
Is the money actually coming from the general fund, as you stated in your motion, or would it be coming from the reserve? Either?
Well, again, I would tell you that the reason I did it that way, and frankly, and in all candor to everybody, is that to me, if the actuary comes back and wants us to do this, if it's this number needs to be a part of our budget process, and by making it part of the general fund, that contribution, then to me, that denotes that it would be part of the budget process as we move forward. I think that way, then, we've sort of given everybody that there's not a right or a wrong path. It's an open conversation, and it allows all of the council members, then, to prioritize this contribution along with streets and public safety and everything else. So,
any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the ayes have it. Thank you very much. Mr. Walker?
Madam Mayor and members of council, the next item under the city manager's agenda is the liquor license for Fortell's Pizza Den, located at 73599 Forsyth, for beer and wine to include Sunday sales. Staff is recommending approval.
And members of council should have found the packet on your desk when you came in tonight. We were advised last week that it would be added. Is there a motion to approve? Mr. Glickert, is there a second? Mr. Crow, any discussion?
When is their scheduled open date? Is there a date scheduled for opening? I live right around the corner, and my kids have been asking me. So this is a point of personal privilege here for just a minute.
Could you come up and give us your name and address, please?
My name's Jeff Bierman, 7359 Forsyth. We're going to do everything we can to have a family and friend day this weekend, which we'd like to extend the welcome to all of you. It'll be Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 8, and we will open to the general public on Monday at 11 a.m., the 17th. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Mr. Walker.
I just wanted to say thank you to everyone in U City. We really pushed this on everybody last week, and everyone, you know, did a great job. They jumped on board and made this thing happen for us, and we're really excited to be a part of your community. And, you know, we're looking forward to being the neighborhood pizzeria. So looking forward to seeing everyone. Thank you.
Welcome to you, City. Thank you very much. Mr. Walker.
The seventh item on the city manager's agenda is the update to council on select budget activities. These were several items that council had identified, and we've provided staff information. I would make one revision on the Civic Plaza consultant. That number should be $15,000 rather than $10,000. $15,000 was approved in the budget, which is on the third page of the report that states 10. That should read $15,000.
Thank you very much.
I'm prepared to address any questions that council may have with respect to the status of these items.
Ms. Carr?
I would like to ask Mr. Walker this question for a point of clarification. Earlier, when we had proposed this money, it was aimed towards the evaluation of the annex, not necessarily 630 Trinity as well. And as I understand it now, it's being aimed towards both. I want to make sure that we have the funds to do the annex first, because that is where our police are presently housed. And there might be considerations down the road for a new police station, moving them out of the annex. So I think it's important to take a look at the annex first.
Members of Council, through to Councilmember Carr, yes, I believe that we need to look at the annex, and we will do that. But I also think that we need to look at 630 Trinity. If we're going to hire a consultant, we should look at all of the buildings in the Civic Plaza. And if need be, if this amount won't cover it, then I would come back to council to ask for some additional funds to do that.
Mr. Crow?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And then, Mr. Walker, on the loop area parking, this is all coming back to us if we decide to move forward. Am I correct? This is sort of just an update, but we've got some large numbers here, $50,000 and $150,000. So if we're doing anything else, it's all coming back.
Correct, Councilmember Crow. In fact, with respect to the loop area parking, I anticipate coming forward with a report from Public Works and Parks on the various options to be considered as part of that.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, thank you very much. We now move on to council reports and business. Boards and commission appointments needed. Mr. Kraft has appointments to the Board of Appeals and the Arts and Letters Commission. Mr. Glickert has appointments to Parks and Green Practices. Mr. Price has appointments to Historic Preservation and the Plan Commission. Mr. Sharp has appointments to Board of Appeals and Traffic. And I have appointments to the Economic Development Sales Tax Board, Arts and Letters, and Parks. I would point out to Mr. Kraft, Mr. Price, and Mr. Sharp that one of your appointments needs specific expertise. If you have any questions about that expertise, please talk to the city clerk. Does any member of council have a report to a board or commission to which they liaise? Okay, then we did have the pension board minutes in and a park minutes in our packet, and we now move on to other discussions and business. Mr. Price and Mr. Sharp.
I'll make this brief. At the last council meeting, it was requested when Mr. Sharp and I brought forward the issue of the surveillance cameras, which was a request from the chief's report dated in September of 2012, that we needed detailed information. Consequently, since then, the city manager went forward with that request, got the necessary financial information. Mr. Sharp and I had a figure of $10,000 per camera, but that request is less than that. For the options that the chief saw as a priority, it came in at $35,517. Also, the chief had sent a request out to the council to come in and do a visual tour of what the cameras can do, their effectiveness. He also sent a report out related to success rate of what the cameras have done for the police and the city. Mr. Sharp and I took him up on that request, and Mr. Sharp can speak for himself, but we both were thoroughly impressed with what we saw. So what my recommendation is today, and Mr. Sharp's, is that we move forward on option one, option A, and option two, which is the priority request made by the police chief, and that this is a one-time expense that we take out of the reserves to pay for this cost. And if you haven't been on a tour, you need to go. But I've seen enough, and we need to move forward. So I'm going to put a recommendation on the floor now that option 1A, option 2 be approved for the cost of $35,517.
We have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
I would just like to say that I, too, was down with Mr. Price when we viewed the cameras and the kinds of things that you would not expect to see are very vivid for the police. We would hope that the citizenry and general would not get a chance to see this, but it is something that I feel that all of us need to have an opportunity to see, and that all of the members of the council, let me say, and that it is very valuable. The cameras are very valuable to the police, and the recommendation that is put forth at this time should be passed without any problems. Thank you.
Mr. Crow?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I guess I'm thinking my question is for the city manager, but I'm not certain whether it needs to be the police chief. I assume Will Electronics is who we've used previously, so it's the same company? Okay. And the cost per camera is give or take about what we paid previously for the first ones, a little more, a little less?
Correct. Once the camera's installed, there's essentially a pod, and from that it's a matter of just adding, and it would be Will Electronics that would do that. They're the sole provider.
Okay. Any other discussion? I will say that I'll be abstaining from the two votes on the agenda tonight. As I've said before, I think it's imperative that any city-funded plans for crime awareness and prevention be designed with the full and active input of our professional staff, and I don't believe this has happened yet. I very much appreciate the concern and commitment these votes represent. However, I think council is incorrect in trying to direct this work. We may need more surveillance cameras in the city of University City, but a decision on how many and where they should be placed should not be made by this council without detailed input from our staff. Do they belong in the Loop? Do they belong in some of our parks? Do they belong in hot corners around the city? I think we need to be looking at citywide and have strong input from staff. We may need and benefit from a public outreach campaign about crime awareness, but we should not be voting on a general plan and general cost outlined in a general memo. Staff and then council should sit down with our professional marketing consultants, detail specific goals for any campaign, and work with them to determine how best to reach those goals. As members of the council know, I strongly believe that we should be involving our residents more deeply in this discussion. Our residents would have input that could be valuable to our professional staff to consider when developing a plan to recommend to the council. Based on the facts of crime in our community, our record of success in reaching our residents with word of what they need to do so they don't become victims of crime, and what has worked in other communities, and I still believe we should be supporting a citizens' task force on crime awareness and prevention. Again, I don't think this council should be making such decisions without more detailed input of our professional staff. I think the budget items should be part of our upcoming budget process, and because of both these points, I will abstain from the votes this evening. Mr. Price and Mr. Kraft. Right. Mr. Sharp.
I'll just make this and we can move on. I'm totally confused by the statement you just made. This recommendation came from the highest officer in this city, which is the police chief. So when you say we haven't talked to staff, this came from the staff, from the people who do the job. This is what they say they need and want. So who these other staff people are, I have no idea who you're talking about. I'm following the recommendations, Mr. Sharp, of what the chief stated they needed. Nobody's deviated from his report and his recommendations. This is what the chief and his staff wants. Now, there may be some other people you're referring to that's not in the police department, but the professional to me on public safety is our chief of police, which we have one of the best in the country. So if that officer, the highest ranking officer in this city, states he wants option one, option 1A, option two, that's what I'm doing. So whoever you're talking about, this nebulous person out here, I don't know, I have no idea what you're talking about or what you're leading to. The other comment is, if you haven't talked to people about crime prevention and public safety, that's on you. This person right there, Mr. Sharp, and I, we've been involved with this for years, and we've been heavily involved in public safety. You just need to get on board with us and come to the party. It's a big party tomorrow, right? By the police focus group. So you need to come to the police focus group party tomorrow and find out about those individuals who've been actively involved with our police department, who's been to the police training. I think, have you? There's one right there. He's been. Who's been to the police academy, who come every fourth Tuesday of the month. You need to show up and find out what's going on. But I don't know what you're talking about when you say there's no forum for people to go. There's one every Tuesday, the fourth Tuesday of the month, and there's a big party tomorrow of people who participate in the focus group. The police chief said this is what he wants. Is this somebody higher than the police chief in the city of U City? Let me know.
Thank you, Mr. Kraft. And Mr. Sharp?
Right, thank you. I love parties. Actually, this is just a clarification for process. So the proposal, I have a sheet here with multiple proposals. The proposal is for option one for $11,574, plus option 1A for $5,699, and then option two, there's a star on the two, so it's two, that's for $18,244. Options, so those are the three that we're voting, is that correct? People are nodding their heads. Okay, and then the next question maybe this is to the city manager. The actual purchases, because I've never bought cars this way before. Usually you come to us with a contract or we authorize you to buy cars. I don't remember us going over the details on the Chevys that we bought for the police department. We just approved buying cars. So will you, to the city manager, will you come back with us to approve the purchase agreement or approve the contract or however that, or is this that approval?
Mr. Walker?
This would essentially, depending upon the decision the council makes, we would approve them. I believe there might be a contract involved in this that we would ask council to approve, given that it exceeds my authority of $25,000.
Okay, so we're going to vote on it tonight, and then when you actually have the actual bid or the actual contract, then you'll come back and we'll vote on it again. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Sharp, then Ms. Carr.
One of the things, let me make sure that we understand, we met with the chief of police, we met with Captain Jackson, we met with the person who is in charge of the cameras and their staff, plus another police officer who guided us through the camera process, what it is that the cameras can and cannot do. The chief of police and Captain Jackson were very, very vehement about the fact that these cameras are very valuable in taking care of some areas of the city. There are other areas of the city that I've talked with the city manager about that are very necessary also. But according to what we saw, and according to what the chief of police and Captain Jackson and the other people who actually work the cameras, these cameras are very valuable to us at this juncture, and it should be something that we should move on now. Thank you.
Ms. Carr?
This is addressed to Mr. Walker. When I opened this email, there was an attachment that included a contract. Would that be the contract we would be signing?
Councilmember Carr, yes.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And I do abstain, Ms. Pum. Mr. Sharp and Mr. Price.
Did everybody vote?
We can poll the council if you'd like. That's fine.
Six people voted yes, and I abstained.
Okay.
Mr. Sharp and Mr. Price.
Moving on to the second topic. And this, Madam Mayor, nobody has said you can't be involved in public safety with the citizens of U City. You're choosing not to. But this is an open invitation for you to do that. Is that the issue of police prevention and awareness meetings, this issue of a task force, we already have the police focus group. The police chief had recommended that people needed to become more aware of what they needed to do to protect person and property. So logically, as we progress, the issue is these prevention meetings. If you looked at your packet and you looked at your patrol zones, theoretically the city could have meetings in those different zones related to the schools where the schools sit. And they can have people come where the police staff will put on seminars for people who have never went to the police focus group, have never participated, so they can start becoming aware of what they can do. I mean, that's not... We don't need 100 people to come together and say, let's do that. I just know that from being involved. I just know that from being in block units. I just know that from being on the city council. It's things I think that all of us should know if we're sitting up here. So if we have seminars where people can become educated about what they can do to protect property and person. They also know what the activities of the police focus group are. Then more people will become involved. And that's where Brighton is. The issue is for the third issue. And I don't really think I put vote, but Mr. Sharp and I, we didn't really think that this required a vote tonight, but it was requested that the city manager go to Brighton and come back with some information, which he did, and they gave a range of cost. And also in their recommendation, they gave some good advice or terminology that we should be using. But it was not detailed. So what I would like for the city manager to do is go back to Brighton and see about getting more detailed information, because they gave a low-end range and a high-end range. So we need more detailed information about exactly what were they talking about. And at this point, I'll yield to Mr. Sharp.
Actually, what Mr. Price had worked with the president of the school board with the idea of saying these are the areas that individuals can be invited to come at the various schools. We would get some form of either through Brighton or through the city manager and the police to get information out, or somewhere get information out to these various areas where they can come and have an opportunity to see what is going on at the focus group meetings. They would have their own focus group meeting right there and then be invited to come to the regular focus group meetings that meet on the fourth Tuesday of each month. A lot of people do a lot of silly things as far as leaving things in their car, not locking their doors, the idea of having a burglar alarm on their car, the idea of having a burglar alarm in their home. There are some suggestions, too, where the police can actually come in and inspect your home and see what kinds of things are necessary for you to have in your home to make sure that it remains safe. So we are suggesting that we have these meetings, and we have more or less, with the help of the president of the school board, designated certain schools to be open at given times, and those times have not been designated yet, whereas individuals can be invited to come to these meetings and get some valuable information on how to protect their homes, their cars, and their persons.
Mr. Kraft? Okay. Any further discussion? Mr. Price?
So, the third point is to the city manager, is to direct the city manager to go back and get more detailed information from Brighton.
Thank you. Okay, we now are Mr. Glicker.
I just need some clarification here from Mr. Sharp, and really from Mr. Sharp, I think, and that is, if we bring Brighton into this scenario to assist us in preventative measures, should we not, in fact, direct the city manager to engage the school district, since Mr. Sharp brought up the meeting points would be in the elementary schools, our middle schools, to keep them fully aware, or actually bring them into this equation? And I know you said that you've had some discussion with the president of the school board. Mr. Price did. Okay, I'm sorry. But I don't want us as a body here to think that, you know, we can solely do this on our own without the full support of the school district and their commitment to a building, and how that will affect Brighton and the financials. Because as you said, Mr. Price, they did throw some hefty numbers at us, and I know just in the recent past that there have been some real concerns about, you know, $125 an hour for Brighton, and we got to watch our statements every month, and I agree. But they are throwing some very heavy numbers out there, and we have already set up
I think, 6 targeted points for them at this point. So I just want, again, point of clarification, and we should do that with the school district. And then that's my thought on the...
And that issue, that commitment of access, of usage, has been given by the district. Their commitment on that was given today.
Ms. Carr?
I also need a point of clarification. I'm wondering if perhaps Councilmember Glickert isn't confusing the two issues. One is these satellite meetings, which is what I'm referring to them as. For instance, I've talked with some people that said, I can't get away on that fourth Tuesday. I have a commission meeting, or I have something else. So I think by providing these alternate spots, they can then attend at least one of these, possibly more. And those meetings are independent of Brighton, as I understand it. Brighton would be figuring out how to do the outreach. This, you know, this other, we seem to have been able to manage on our own. Am I correct? Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion? Thank you very much. We now move on. Mr. Sharp.
May I say this too? If by chance the figure that Brighton gives us is overwhelming, then there is a possibility that we can go and do some things within the city as far as getting information out to these individuals. We were saying Brighton because of the fact that they are one of the informational arms of the city. But if it seems that the price is just prohibitive, then we will find some other way of carrying this out.
Thank you, sir. We now move on to unfinished business. Bill number 9168 before us tonight contains some suggested amendments. Does anyone want to move to amend as noted in the document? The red line. Mr. Price would like to move to amend as noted. Okay, this is an amendment. Okay. Mr. Price is moving to amend as noted in the red line version of the bill. Mr. Sharp seconds. Is there any discussion on the proposed changes? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Ms. Pum, may we have the second reading of Bill number 9168 as amended?
An ordinance amending Chapter 8.24, Nuisances of the Municipal Code of University City by enacting new definitions by repealing Sections 8.24.260 and 8.24.270 and by enacting in lieu thereof a new Section 8.24.260 providing for the declaration, prosecution, and abatement of criminal nuisance.
May we have a third reading, please?
An ordinance amending Chapter 8.24, Nuisances of the Municipal Code of University City by enacting new definitions by repealing Section 8.24.260 and 8.24.270 and by enacting in lieu thereof a new Section 8.24.260 providing for the declaration, prosecution, and abatement of criminal nuisances.
What's the pleasure of the council? Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second? Mr. Glickert seconds? I'm sorry. Mr. Glickert moved. Mr. Sharp seconded. Any discussion? Price?
Yeah, I do. To the city manager, this is also a forward attempt to get at issues to me as it relates to individuals who may pose a nuisance, who may have some criminal activity going on in a residence. So this is a part of a total strategic strategy in relationship to the cameras, the prevention and awareness meetings that are taking place, as well as the focus group. Can you tell us what benefits that you see with the nuisance law and then some of the changes?
Through to Council Member Price. As he indicated, this will be just part of the package that we have to ensure that our community remains to be a safe environment. With respect to this particular nuisance law, this is going to streamline and consolidate various tools that we've had in the past. It also identifies specifically and defines very clearly what are considered to be criminal nuisances and will allow us to address problem properties in particular, whether it's the property itself or whether the people who are living in the property, essentially so they have to behave themselves.
Mr. Glickert?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I want to direct this to the city manager, and I would like to see if we could take a look, a study, a cursory look at the time in which we have housing court. I believe that that is germane to one of the reasons why we have problems and why we're doing this tonight. Historically, we've had housing court in the evening. Better attendance. Why? Well, some of the criminals do work during the day, and the nuisance people. When do we have housing court, which was changed under a previous administration? It's during the day. Who's going to show up? Those are banker's hours. So I really think that on top of an effective ordinance, we should have the services available here in which we can prosecute and, quite frankly, have them show up. So if you looked into that and get back to us, just an idea.
Madam Mayor, through to Councilmember Glickert, as part of that, I'd like to look at the time, but also the location as well of housing court. I think that I know when we were doing the renovations to this building, we had housing court over at the community center, and it seemed to work quite well.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Plum, would you please poll the council?
Mr. Price. Ms. Carr.
Aye.
Mr. Kraft. Mr. Crow, Mr. Glickert, Mr. Sharp, Mayor Welsh.
Aye. Thank you very much. We have no new business tonight, no new resolutions, no new bills, no more requests to speak. Does any member of council have any comments? I have a few things to mention. I attended the breakfast with the Alliance for Childhood Education earlier this week. That is an effort to get local business leaders more involved in advocating for the support of improved public education. It was held over at the U-City Children's Center. I attended a holiday gathering for the County Economic Council. Also attended the Clarion Brass Concert led by U-City resident and trumpeter Mary Reber. With Councilmember Sharp, I attended the National League of Cities Conference. I'll be providing more info on that later. Tomorrow night, I'll be giving Hanukkah greetings at the Chabad House on Del Mar, and then we'll attend the holiday party for the police focus group. Wednesday night in the old library building at 6 o'clock, volunteers for Fair U-City 2013 will meet to continue planning for next year's fair. Everyone's welcome, and if you want more information, let me know. And I wish everyone a happy and healthy holiday season. Mr. Crow.
Well, I think Mr. Sharp and I both had just some quick comments. I had the pleasure of attending the opening of the Hanukkah celebration in the Loop on Saturday night. It was a wonderful event. We had a number of families throughout our community, plus a whole throng of WashU students. And then I also, I'm sure, the rest of council joins me in the welcoming of Tesla and their service center to University City. And it'll be interesting to see how that new business works out for us here in the city. So if any member of the city staff has any information on how they found us or how they got a good deal of publicity, I'm just kind of curious as to how that came about. Thank you.
Mr. Sharp, did you have something?
I did, but I'll wait until next time based upon the fact that what I was dealing with was our trip to Boston. I wanted to say some things about that, but I'll wait until another time. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I adjourn this meeting of the City Council at 8:07 p.m. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Happy and healthy holidays. Bye.